Does loyalty exist in the restaurant space?
Oh, I think it does. I think it does. You're the perfect example because you go to Starbucks every single day because there's something about that experience that you love. And my guess is it's because they know you when you come in and they know what coffee you want. And so that's something about that experience.
I think restaurant business is very simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
I mean, there's three ways to run a business. Get more customers, get them to come back more often, and then increase your pricing. I think restaurants are great at getting customers, but I don't see anything in retention. We see you every single day. We've seen you for 6 months every single day. And then all of a sudden I leave the country. Crickets. Nothing that says, hey, Hamid, are you still alive? My question to you is, how do you drive retention? Because that's one of your three pillars.
Something that really changed for restaurants, especially fast casual restaurants in the pandemic, is there was no tipping in fast casual.
Actually, I was just about to bring that up. I'm glad. I was just literally thinking about that. Go ahead.
There was no tipping.
Sure.
And so what would you think tipping would add to the average hourly wage for a typically young person, not always a young person, but
sure,
someone working in a fast casual restaurant? But it's somewhere between $4 and $5 an hour.
So do you tip? Do you have tipping?
Yeah,
It's counter service, right? You don't sit down and order at the table?
No.
You just order at the counter?
Or the kiosk, right? Or online, but it's sort of become natural. You go get an ice cream now, somebody, pours an ice cream, you hand it to you, and you give them a 20% or 22%.
Well, actually, not even that.
22% tip.
I walked up to a kiosk. Well, I walked up in an ice cream shop and I tried to go through the line order and they're like, no, they refused to take the order at the counter. They said, you have to use the kiosk. And I'm not a big fan. So I went to the kiosk and it's like, hey, can I, do you want a tip? And I'm like, is that for me? Because I put the order in,
Right.
So anyway, but yeah, tipping is everywhere. So you do tips as well.
So and it started with the pandemic and I think it was the world's way of saying, hey, we appreciate you being here because not everybody's out working. We appreciate you being out here.
Appreciation from the customer to the employee.
Yeah, like you're putting yourself on the line. We didn't really understand the pandemic at the time, right?
Yeah.
We didn't know how serious or how not serious it was. And we felt like anyone who was on the front line was putting themselves out there at a little bit at risk. So we were rewarding people. And that's when we added tipping in, right? And so it's like one of those things you can't take back now, right? And so you have an average, a lot of times high school or college entry level folks that are now making an extra $4 or $5 an hour. You're not going to reduce their pay by $4 or $5.
Sure.
And the guest pays for it, right? And so so that's been an interesting dynamic.
I'm curious, what's your tipping percentages? What is your breakdown? Is it 15, 18, 20, 25, 30?
I think it's 18, 20, 22.
Gotcha, yeah.
I think it's, but it is interesting how, first of all, there was no tipping in fast casual. That was always the value proposition for fast casual, right? You go to sit down at a restaurant and you get table service, you tip. So you go to fast casual, you don't really tip.
Sure.
But I mean, I don't know if there's anyone out there at this point that's not tipping. It's part of the retention,
Yeah, so I'm curious. I had this conversation with another person. So In-N-Out, Chick-fil-A doesn't tip. Who else? I think there's like Raising Cane's. I don't think they do tipping. Why do you think that they're able to get away with it and have a better cost infrastructure and manage the labor better when they don't do it versus you guys?
Versus
everybody else, not you guys. I'm going to single you out.
Well, first of all, those are like huge, huge brands and mostly company owned. Even Chick-fil-A is not a real franchise. We all know that. And so incredibly profitable. So franchisees are, they're buying into a system, right? And so they pay a royalty for that. And they're paying typically 5 or 6% royalties. They're paying anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5, depending on the franchise, percent marketing. So they're giving up 10% of their sales. It's more expensive to be a franchisee. And if you're competing with a company owned restaurant, and by the way, they have 1,000 restaurants, it's a difficult to compete with. And so it probably levels the playing field. So name some franchises that don't tip. I don't know. There might be some out there, but my guess is that's probably the difference. I mean, it's not something we wanted to do. It was one of those things I think we all did reluctantly. It's difficult to get the toothpaste
back. I don't think there's anything wrong to do it, but I'm just more like, hey, why is it some, why not the others? And then I think in fast casual, it makes sense to have tipping. I'm not saying they shouldn't be tipping. Yeah. I think the percentages maybe could be adjusted. And I think that I personally think if I went to a sit down restaurant, like I was at one the other day, and the tipping started at 20, 25, 30.
That's what's happened.
That's crazy to me.
Tip inflation, right?
Yeah.
Tipping is one thing, but then now there's tip inflation.
Big time inflation.
Everywhere you're seeing like 20, 22, 25, you know. So
yeah,
crazy.
These guys went all the way to 30%. So I'm paying 40% over the menu price for that food. But again, fine, great service, no problem, happy to tip. And I think if maybe on the fast casual side, I think if they adjusted it, like I remember when tips were like 10, 12, 15%, right? But I think if they do like maybe, I don't know, 12, 15, 18, then more people may tip.
Yeah. Well,
and it wouldn't stick a shock them that it's like, hey, I'm at the counter, yada, 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 et cetera.
My belief is that that's sort of just become
the norm.
The norm, and we're all paying 15 to 20% more than we used to pay.
Interesting. All right, let's go to like it sounds like you're majority franchisees, right?
Yeah.
Are there any company-owned stores in the portfolio?
Yeah, we have company-owned stores, and you know, we've made a strategic decision that we want to be really good franchisors, and part of that is owning a couple of company restaurants, but it's also very different operationally to run your own restaurants versus franchising, because franchising, you know, you're trying to figure out how to make a franchisee more profitable, and your day to day is completely different than if you're running company restaurants. You're running company restaurants, you're dealing with employee issues and scheduling and things like that. And if you're running franchise restaurants, you're working with the distributors and the vendors and on behalf of the franchisees. And to do both, you really need two separate teams. And so we've made the decision, we really want to lean into franchising and get better and better and be world-class franchisors.
And you're buying brands that are already franchised, or?
Yeah, we look at franchise. Now, we have not purchased a company-owned brand, but we've looked at company-owned brands, and you know, but we would have a separate team to run the company restaurants if we had company restaurants. And we also, when we look at company restaurant, like company all company-owned, is it franchisable? Because not all company-owned restaurants are franchisable, because is there enough there has to be enough margin to collect a royalty so the franchisee can still, you know, be successful. And so there are plenty of company-owned restaurants that maybe make 8, 9, 10% margin, but then you charge royalties. There's no profit left for the franchisee. So you have to have very high margins to be franchisable.
Makes sense. What does that portfolio of franchisees look like? Is it Mumbos, like the multi-unit, multi-brand operators?
It's single? A mix. Yeah, it's a mix. And so I would say as our brands have evolved and become a little more, I would say, professional, because they're founder-led and the founders do, you know, they have such passion.
Of course.
But there's not necessarily a ton of systems, and they're passion-grown, I guess. And so... So founder-led is much different. We're more systematized, if you will, and we love process and, you know, to put things in place that make it easier for the franchisee to execute, and it's a little less shooting from the hip. My point was we're now attracting more Mumbos, so we have a lot of people coming in buying tens, and we have, I mean, it's gone from mostly owner-operator to, I would say, the majority of our deals are multi-unit deals now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think, I would think, like, I have a great idea for you would be, like, why not just get a shopping center and put four different brands? You got a burrito concept, you got a Mediterranean concept, you've got the Greek concept. Why not?
I mean,
Have Mumbos that actually do that?
Not yet, but we do have Mumbos that now have up to, let's see, we have one franchisee that has four of our brands now.
Oh, interesting.
And so several, and I mean, we're you got to realize WildWorks only started in December, basically Christmas of 2020. So we're only a few years old.
Sure.
And we already have so many multi-brand franchisees with our own brands. And so I think that will only grow. And what makes that possible for them is we do a completely unified operations team. So all of our operational procedures, this is new and something that most of the platform companies don't do. Same POS, same distributor, same opening closing processes. There's more similarities than there are differences in the way we run the brands operationally. So.
Well, because I would think that running the restaurant, if they're closely related, chicken is the ingredient, like you've got the same ingredients, etc. But more importantly, if I'm trying to franchise something and I'm going to open 2, 3, 4, and if I'm doing it in my hometown, I could have 4 different brands and own all 4 different brands.
That's right.
And still be in my backyard.
Right. And so, you know, a good example is a lot of franchisees don't want to drive very far to go see all their restaurants. And they have a brand, and let's say you're a Barberitos franchisee. There's no place to put any additional Barberitos, but I can add a SaladWorks or Garbanzo. So that's what we're starting to see. And they can continue to grow their business with our brands. And the reason they would choose our brands over other brands is, like, I can move my people around because I have the same POS.
That's true.
I have the same distributor. I have the same, by the way, business consultant and the same franchisor. So it's kind of like one throat to choke, if you will.
Yeah,
so
I think all in one
relationship.
That's an all-in-one system,
Make it so much easier for them.
Right? I agree. Yeah, and not everybody's going to eat. Actually, I didn't think about that. But since you do that, do you track customers across multiple brands?
So we are just getting ready for that. So I mean we haven't really had the technology to be able to do that in the past, but that's definitely something we're going to be able to do very, very soon.
Yeah, because I'm not going to eat at McDonald's every day, but if you have a McDonald's brand, a burrito brand, and a chicken brand, and whatever else, then you could cross market to me. Hey, you had burritos today. How about burger tomorrow? How about chicken tomorrow? How about Mediterranean the next
day,
et cetera.
And I think that's the future for us.
Yeah,
for sure. And do we do WildWorks specific gift cards and loyalty programs? And so your points are good at one of our other brands, and I think that's what our future holds for us.
Yeah, I would think you would absolutely crush it with customer retention, because they're eating somewhere. Why not at your brands, at your restaurants?
And we don't all want to eat at the same restaurant every day.
You don't, and that's the beauty of that.
Yeah, I mean, our vision is we get to a place where people, our guests trust us, and they know that we're focused on food being clean, and they can go into any of our restaurants, and if they're vegan and they put in vegan that they're vegan, and it'll show you what all of our vegan items are, right? It'll tell you what our nutritional values are across all of our brands. And so after, we would love to be the resource for them in the future. And so as you see a WildWorks evolve, you'll see things like nutritional guidance, exercise guidance, things like that on our websites out there digitally. We're working on all those things now for the future.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it ties one to the other, exercising and the food.
Yeah.
All right, so this one platform, multiple brands. Let's get a little bit more into that. You said you've consolidated, you use the same procedure, same POS, for example, or same technology stuff across multiple brands. How a lot of brands aren't doing that. How did you pull that together? Like, even some of the big ones, I can see why not, because if you're doing it across 8,000 locations, it's different. You guys are roughly around 300 or so?
Yeah. The how is, it's hard, right? So that's why not everyone does it. And it's a disciplined approach. And so we had to be very disciplined to say, we can't, it's difficult to manage when you own 6 brands, and we'd love to own 20 brands in the future, and we probably will. But it's difficult to manage 20 POS systems, 20 distributors, 20 different chicken vendors. You have even different titles. So when you purchase a company, the person who helps the franchisees either called a business coach or a business consultant, or they have a number of different names, like choose a name. And so just really systematize everything. And so It's very easy for portfolio companies to put together technology, accounting, legal, all the back of the house things that you have to do. That's much easier. It's more difficult to do culinary shared service, marketing shared service, operations shared service. And so what that takes is years of documentation and systems and bringing the operational and marketing leaders of those brands together constantly and making things dissimilar. It's like, okay, here's our opening process. Here's our opening process. Here's our closing checklist. Here's our closing checklist. Let's make them the same. They're almost the same, but we have different steps of service or procedures. And so it's just making them all the same. And so our operations team set out about 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, to make it, we call, one WOW way, and started documenting and putting all the training procedures together. Then we had to cross-train all of our business coaches and business consultants, is now what we call them. But we had to train all of them on all the brands. We've had to train the marketing team the same way. Now, we do split up the marketing team slightly so that they can be more focused on specific brands, but they all still report into the same CMO.
That makes sense. Yeah. How many people are at the corporate office?
It gets smaller and smaller because we're able to, well, actually it's not getting smaller because we're continuing to grow, but we can run the company. We have, including the people who are overseeing the company stores right now, like 100 and something, you know, people. But as we start selling off our corporate restaurants to franchisees, we'll probably be in that 75 range.
Yeah, that's ingenious. Just being able to like bring all of that in one, and I think you've executed on a vision that I've shared with several people, and I think it sounds like you're well on your way.
It's constantly evolving, sure. And we get better at it all the time, for sure.
Yeah, it just makes it so much easier because obviously take all the headache away from the brand, offload what you can, and then marketing makes sense. Have somebody that lives, breathes that brand and understands that metrics,
yeah, and they don't have to understand like the bar business necessarily. They have,
sure.
But fast casual is more similar than it is different as well. The approach, the guest you're looking for is, you know, someone who's a little more particular about what's, you know, in their food. And so you're marketing to the same types of people. And so our marketing team can be a lot more efficient. The strategies that work at Garbanzo will probably work at Barbaritos.
Gotcha. Let's get into the marketing technology a little bit more. So what does that marketing look like? What does the technology look like? How do they, what's your opinion on the two?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about what you see going forward.
I mean, marketing technology is this thing that just changes all the time in our business. And at the end of the day, it's pointless unless it improves the guest experience. It's all about the guest experience. How do you make it easier for them, whether it's, you know, online ordering, you know, the world pandemic also accelerated that part of our life.
Of course.
So many people don't want to go out anymore. By the way, I happen to believe that humans are communal and they want to be together. And so they want to go out, and a great place to meet is a restaurant and spend time or meet someone for lunch. It's a great place to go. So I do think that there's definitely going to be a demand for in-restaurant dining probably forever. And I hope so, right? I hope so. But there's also this new phenomenon that people are willing to pay a tremendous amount of money to sit at home on their couch in front of their TV and eat food. And they don't want to cook either.
Yeah, so, well, convenience. You can never put a price on convenience.
And so, you know, if you order a Starbucks, a single cup of coffee, you know, 50 years ago was what, 50 cents?
Yeah.
And no, it's actually about $13.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, delivery fees.
And then you're going to throw a tip on there, so you could pay up to $20 for a cup of coffee now, because, and I, you know, when you go into Starbucks now, you see all these DoorDash orders lined up, and you're like, oh, those people are paying a pretty price for their coffee this morning. So that's a phenomenon that's changed, and of course you want that technology to run seamlessly. You know, the advent of, we all thought kiosks were never going to happen because people would just go straight to their phone, but it's amazing that people still don't want to go into a restaurant and order from their phone. It just never happened, but people will go to the kiosk, and maybe it's because you get to see the the food photography is so much bigger, and I don't know what it is. I think the airports, you know, taught us years ago, the airlines, I guess, taught us years ago that, and then the, pretty much Walmart, Home Depot, CVS, you name it, retailers have taught us to check ourselves out and to ring ourselves out. And so, you know, restaurants are always the last to come to pretty much anything that's regarding
restaurants
technology.
Always lagging in technology.
We're always lagging in technology. But I think it is how we make the experience better for our guests, right? And also, you know, there's also that part of the technology that how do we get to know our guests better, and how can we develop a relationship directly with them, right, and market directly to them, because they're all their unique selves. You know, they're everyone's original, right? We all have our own thing. And so if I learn what your own thing is and I can start marketing to you directly, how powerful is that? And I think we're not quite there. We think we're getting there though, right?
So yeah, well, that brings I think restaurant business is very simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
Right? And that could be said for any business. Like even I'm in technology and telecom side, even my business, it's simple, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Really, there is only three ways to, regardless of what business you're in, you got to acquire customers. I mean, there's three ways to run a business and three ways to make it successful. Get more customers, get them to come back more often, and then increase your pricing. And regardless of what industry you're in. So in the restaurant space, I think restaurants are great at getting customers. Price increases, I think they've exhausted that option. But I don't see anything in retention. Even my favorite restaurant, actually Starbucks. I used to go to Starbucks every single day. These guys ghosted me. So I go to Starbucks every single day, my favorite restaurant, walk in. It was to a point that I didn't even have to say anything. I would just hand my cup, get whatever I want, I scan the thing and move on. The manager kept pushing me. He's like, hey, you come in every single freaking day, just download the freaking app. And I'm like, no, I don't want to have another app. I have 156 apps. I use 10 or 15 of them on a daily basis. I'm like, I don't want another app. And he kept pushing. Finally, I downloaded the app, joined the rewards program, and then started paying and loaded it, did the whole thing, and gave him my money that is loaded on the app so I could pay via that. And then all of a sudden, I leave the country. Crickets. Radio silence. Not a single push notification, not a single email, nothing that says, hey, Hamid, are you still alive? Like, we see you every single day. We've seen you for 6 months every single day. And now for the past 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, for 6 weeks, nothing. Get back in the country. I was out of the country, so I come back. Go to Starbucks for like 2-3 weeks, and nothing had like nothing to drive retention. And I always use Starbucks as the golden standard. If you would have asked me what's the best way to implement loyalty, I'd be like, hey, just go look at Starbucks, see what they're doing, do that. But then when I actually went through it, I'm like, holy crap, like even these guys are not really doing anything with retention. My question to you is, how do you drive retention? Because that's one of your three pillars. Again, let's step outside of the restaurant industry, regardless of that space. You got to get customers, you got to increase pricing, or you got to get them to buy more often. Mm-hmm. With the technology coming, like our average customer retention is about 7.5 years right now. 7.5 years that customer is a customer that pays on a monthly basis. Now for us, it's very difficult to acquire customers. We spend a ton of money getting a customer in the door, but once we get them, they don't leave. You, on the other hand, in the restaurant space, it's easy for you to get the customer, but you lose 70% of them after first visit.
Yeah.
How do you bring them back?
So, I mean, it's a phenomenon in the restaurant industry. The thing that always surprised me, because you know, when I first got into the restaurant business, we talked about the leaky bucket, and it's always like 60-70% of your guests only come once.
Ever.
Yeah. And it's I'm like, that can't be true. But it's over and over and over again. We've proven it. If you're a really, really strong brand, it's maybe a 60% leaky bucket, right? So you're definitely in the 60s. And so obviously loyalty really helps. And you said you're a loyal guest to Starbucks, even though they do nothing. So, you know, there's a good, it depends on the brand, but you know, probably 10-11% up to maybe even 17-18% of the guests are loyal, and they use their app and they come in, they want their points. You can market to them, and not everything resonates with the guests. So you sort of have to figure out and you put them into like cohort groups, right?
Sure.
And so some people are very value driven. Some people don't care about value, but they're very like, oh, new item, blue spirulina. Oh, that sounds really cool. They want like flavors, and it's a limited time offer, and I'm going to come get that because I'm a flavor seeker. And so you sort of learn over time, these people are more value driven. This set. Is more experience driven, and so they want something that's only going to be around a short time. It sounds really cool. It's summer, and I want very berry sounds very exciting. Or it's fall, and because of Starbucks, we all love pumpkin spice or some sort of a cinnamon apple flavor in the fall. And so that's you can chase those guests and get them to come back more. And so there's many other tactics, but.
So you do LTOs, you do value, yeah. You do experience, et cetera.
People love experience days, right? And so everybody wants a tax day offer, and there's always a national burrito day or a national salad day. And people want to be a part of that. Or you work with some of your vendors, so the Avocados of Mexico, for example, they will run a special, they'll help us promote it. And people will come because they love avocado, or they love guacamole, or some sort of an ingredient. Avocado is an ingredient on either a salad or whatever, and so you can run specials on that. People participate in that big
sure.
time, big time.
My question to you will be: does loyalty exist in the restaurant space?
Oh, I think it does. I think it does.
How so? Run me through it.
You're the perfect example.
All right, let's see.
Right, so
I'm the toughest example, but
you're the best example because you go to Starbucks every single day because you love the restaurant. So there's something about that experience that you love. And my guess is it's because they know you when you come in, and they know what coffee you want. And so that's something about that experience, right?
1,000%. I agree 100%. That's exactly why I go, because I've built that rapport with them.
Right. So I think it may be something else for someone else, right? And so some people, by the way, there's a lot of people who don't want anybody to talk to them at all. They love the experience of being able to go in. And so this is an example I was given just a couple of weeks ago, which really surprised me. But there was a deaf customer, and they loved the kiosk because they could go in and they didn't have to interact, and there wasn't a communication barrier. They could put their order in and get their order without having to experience and with their handicap.
Yeah.
They were able to, it was a much better experience. So I believe that person will come back over and over again because that made the experience nicer for them.
Sure.
Where someone like you said you don't like to use the kiosk, you'd rather them know who you are, know your name, and know what you want every day, right? And so I think it's all about the guest experience. And so as we started talking about technology and how that I think technology can improve people's experience with a kiosk, but I think that it's our responsibility as restaurateurs to make sure that the guest has a great experience, whatever the experience is they expect. And so I think if you have technology and guest service is really important for you, or it's the ingredients in the food. In our case, we believe that there's a cohort of guests that want clean food, and they come to us, and they're going to be loyal to us because of that. Some people are going to be loyal to us because they love that signature item, the Bentley at Salad Works, for example, or some people may love the kiosk experience, or some people may just love it because you know their name and you know what they want.
Sure.
And it's like we have a franchisee in Hunter's Creek, which is outside of Orlando, and I've been in her restaurant, and she knows all the guests, and she knows exactly what they want. She sees them come in the door, they start making their acai bowl
because
they get
the
same thing every day, right?
That's experience.
And so, but you have to make the guest experience great. And if technology doesn't help that, then it's not really useful for us,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, I think, again, you could sum the whole restaurant space in, I think, three things. Most people will say two. I'll say three. Great food. If that's not there, if their Starbucks coffee sucks, I'm not going to go there, regardless of, well, if the service is outstanding, fine. I'll be a little bit more lenient on the quality, but the quality has got to be there.
Yeah.
And the service has got to be there. So if those two are there, I think you just need a little bit, just a touch of technology, just to nudge them and say, listen, you came in, how was that experience? Oh, it was horrible. Why? What happened? Let me fix it. Here's a buy one, get one free. Here's XYZ. Here's a $20 gift card. Come back, try it out. I'll find you, da, 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 da. And if the experience was amazing, just push them to leave you more reviews. So that way, obviously, reduces your acquisition costs. And then just push them in, like have some sort of a first-time customers. Like, you know that 70% won't come back. You know that, like, we actually built this out in our customer data platform. We have a big thing above our CDP. Like, when you go to the CDP, right up there, that says, you know, 60, 70% first-time visitors. Goes down to, like, 20% second-time visitors. Goes down to, like, 10, 12% third-time. And goes down to, like, 3 or 4% fourth-time visitors. However, once you get to the fifth time, it goes back up to 7, 8, 10, 12%. So I say loyalty because I don't think that loyalty really exists. It's just that behavior. Because if it was loyalty, why wouldn't I eat McDonald's breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Well, I think but you may be loyal to them for breakfast once a week.
Okay, so, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. I understand that point.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm a guest as well, right? And we all have our fave five or whatever, right? So we're so habitual about everything we do, but it's like I have my favorite five, and then maybe there's a concentric circle around that that's my second favorite five, but I go to these guys every other week. I go to these guys once a month, and there's another circle that I probably go to like once a quarter, right?
Yeah, so I guess my thing is, so we talked about labor costs, food costs, etc. How do you ensure that a restaurant is successful? What should I care for? I'm not in a restaurant space. I'm going to go in and buy a restaurant tomorrow. What are the top three or four things that I need to know and be aware of to ensure that I succeed?
So first of all, I think if I'm a new franchisee, I want a franchisor that cares. If you're starting your own business, that's a different ballgame altogether.
Sure.
Right? But you're buying into a franchise because there's a high likelihood of success because there's a proven system, especially a brand that's been around for a long time. It's like, well, somehow these guys are able to stay in business for 20, 30 years. That's a good sign as well, right? And so once you meet the team, there's a lot of questions you should ask about support and things like that. But at the end of the day, what do you think is going to resonate with the guests? Is the food quality good? And how hard is it? I mean, there's some very complex restaurants out there. And
so it sounds like food quality is the number one thing to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think you got to make sure that the food is good. There's definitely a cohort that wants clean food. So by the way, a lot of our franchisees just want to bring clean food to their town. They're like, we don't have a lot of choices. And I'd love to bring a Salad Works Fruit Bowl combination to my town because I can bring basically a healthy dining spot to my town. And so that's what we see a lot of that when franchisees come in. And then you need to ask about the unit level economics. You know, how does this work? Take me through the math. What's really interesting about franchising is we're very limited on what we can tell people. We'd love to be able to take them through and say, this is how you make a restaurant successful. But then it becomes an earnings claim. And then, the Federal Trade Commission regulates what we can and can't tell. And then once they're in the system, we can take them and really help them improve their unit level economics. But you can only show them so much and tell them so much because you can't get yourself in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission.
Gotcha.
Really interesting.
So I guess let's circle back to that question one more time and try to go through. So pick the right franchisee, right food service, food quality.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be something you want to buy something that you're passionate about, right? So if you're passionate about healthy food, then you're going to love one of our brands, right? If you happen to love Mediterranean and you believe your town needs Mediterranean, then you would buy a garbanzo, right? Burritos are always hot. And if I can bring a good, healthy, clean burrito to my town, I mean, there's other burrito concepts in my town, but I also want, or I may want an acai, I may be really passionate about acai and smoothies, but you want an acai brand that actually has real acai. Because most of the acai brands out there have pineapple, banana, and an acai powder. They call it acai. It's really not. It's just it's a fruit mixture. You know, it
comes back to that better for you food. So let's talk about then what's next for you guys. So you're at 6-7 brands. You want to get to about maybe 20 brands. What does that look like? How is that gonna? I'll better ask it this way. If I'm a brand that I'm operating, why should I sell to you guys, or why should I contact you, and why should I go with you guys?
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, people who sell their brands are selling it for different reasons. Maybe, I mean, there's a lot of founders who build a business and they don't really know what their exit strategy is, right? They're like, they own it and they enjoy running it, but they're like, I want to retire and I don't really have an exit strategy. So we're a good, you know, place to come and we, you know, we could see if it fits in our portfolio. A lot of times we knock on doors and we just see if someone's ready to exit the business, or we, you know, it's such a good deal for them that, you know, they want to exit the business. But, you know, I think the future for us is, you know, we're working on management buying out, you know, the private equity firm that backs us today. And we've basically come to an agreement and we're working on our investors. But then I think once we get that structure in place, then we want to go out and acquire more brands. And so we look at growth a couple of different ways. Organic growth, we love the brands we have. We want to grow the brands. We want to help the franchisees grow their businesses. So that's a big focus. And then acquisition's a big focus for us as well, because the more brands we can bring in, the more units we can bring in, it improves the buying power. And this core that we have, we can reduce their food costs. So every time we add a brand, we're able to go back and, you know, renegotiate our, because our volumes get bigger, right? So we're able to renegotiate our contracts and bring costs down, not for ourselves, but for the franchisees.
Of course, yeah, they're more buying power on
right,
that stage.
Right, because we don't benefit typically from that, but we benefit when the franchisees benefit.
Of course, yeah. And obviously they're buying into the franchise model because they're expecting all that stuff to be done, et cetera, so. Amazing. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm glad that we were able to connect and do it in person. So
yeah,
thanks
awesome.
For coming on. Yeah. I think there's a huge demand for what you're doing. Again, I'm a big passionate around the food stuff. I don't think any of your locations are here around town, unfortunately. And I don't want to become a franchisee and I don't want to get in a restaurant industry.
I was going to say, we can make that happen.
I know. Otherwise, I would probably buy one of each brand, buy a shopping center and put, you know, four different restaurants, share a wall.
I do think you will see somewhere in the next, I would say 24 months max, you'll see all of our restaurants in the center somewhere.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And I think there is what you're doing. I really strongly believe in it. That I've said that vision, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to execute on it, but it sounds like you've done a great job executing. And I've said this, and I'll repeat it again. I think by end of the decade, you're going to have a series of billionaires that make their money in the restaurant space doing what you're doing. Better food, better customer experience, hell of a technology to back them, and they're just going to absolutely crush it on all levels. Customer acquisition, retention, again, good food, good service, etc. And I think you're on your way there. So
awesome,
I'll be definitely watching from the sideline, if not hopefully get involved somehow.
Awesome. Great.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.